south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, today I'm going to tie up some loose ends, but before I get to that, if you recall from past shows, I always tell everyone that Latin Americans just don't read. Sure, they read parts of the front page and the sports page, but they're mostly interested in television and social media, like Facebook and Twitter, etc., which are the latest and greatest things down here. Like expat Eddie says, Latins have now joined the international navel-gazing community. The fact is, Latins just don't read books unless they're in school. In fact, in all the years I've been down here in Latin America, and all the great parties I've been to with the high rollers and the hoi polloi, and, of course, the bottom end, too, I've never met a single author who actually made a living at it. And yes, I have been to a few Latin book signings. Yes, those authors clean up real nice, and then they go back to that job at the hardware store in the morning. So know that in the smaller Latin countries, artists and authors, etc., can almost never make even a middle-class living out of it. Although, some do in the bigger Latin countries like Mexico and Argentina, etc., but I'll tell you, it's like being a musician or visual artist in Latin America. The story is nearly always the same. Talented young Latin artists, unless they come from wealthy families, then they can be crap and still have quite a career because daddy and mommy are financing that little hobby. You know, pressuring their businessman and banking friends to buy the stuff and often setting them up in their own gallery in a very high-end part of town. Anyway, the other 99.9% of people who are artists or think they are, coming from the unentitled classes, start out as starving artists for sure, like every artist does. However, they've got almost zero chance of ever getting out of that category. Unless, of course, they happen to be lucky enough to be in a high-volume tourist area and they can prey on tourists with some real campy, crappy art. In foreign tourist spots, junk art flies right off the shelf, doesn't it? I mean, come on. When you've been in a foreign country, haven't you bought what you thought was a nice piece of local art? Well, sorry, I'm here to tell you it's mostly junk that these tourist area artists have figured out by hook and crook, catches the feel of the area, the local lake, the mountains, the Mayans, the Incas, the Toltecs, the Aztecs, whatever. And tourists who just have to have a reminder of that fantastic trip, whether it's a hand-painted ashtray, volcano sunset, or hand-painted warrior, you just know there's a spot for it in the house or in the office back in Cleveland. But really, 90% of that tourist art Aunt Dolores has back home on her coffee table ain't worth the clay it's potted with. Nope, that ain't art. But don't tell her I said so. Now, for example, let's pick the country of, Nicaragua. I'd say there's about 20 artists in the whole country that actually make a living at it. Enough to have their own house, but still, probably no car. And out of that group, nearly all of them, or at least three-quarters of them, are making their money off of tourism in gringos. In other words, they'll have an art gallery in a place like Granada, Nicaragua, where there's a lot of tourists. What I'm saying is, without the tourists, the local economy itself cannot support artists, or writers, or theater groups, or symphony orchestras. You see, down here in Latin America, people in those activities have to have second jobs or continue to live with mommy and daddy. And believe me, almost all of them are living on the edge. But like I said, there are some bigger Latin countries like Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, and of course Colombia, which is probably the most cultured of all. Anyway, those big Latin countries, with huge cities that have millions in population, can support a small number of writers, for example. Now, note that because these are macho countries, the writers that do get some support are about 95% male. In fact, there have even been one or two Nobel Prize-winning writers in the history of Latin American writing. But they were only able to do that by breaking into the mainstream, crossing over, and getting first world recognition. Because, you know, after all, the Nobel Committee is based in Sweden, where they're all English, German, or French speakers. And yes, Swedish too. No Spanish spoken there. So anyway, like I said, if you're coming down to Latin America to do any writing or become an artist, you better plan on selling and marketing your stuff to the tourists or to the first world, via the internet or whatever. Anyway, back to the point. Latin Americans do not read books. Oh, that's not to say upscale Latins don't have books on the shelves and sitting on coffee tables and stuff, but it's a show, just like it is nowadays for many, many North Americans. Yes, I know, North Americans hardly read books anymore either. In fact, the Pew Research Center this year reported that nearly a quarter of American adults had not read a single book in the past year, as in they hadn't cracked a paperback, fired up a Kindle, or even hit play on an audiobook in their iPod or in their car. In fact, some researchers say that 25% number is a big lie too, a vast underestimate, because Americans are quite embarrassed to say that they aren't readers. Even in polls, a lot of Americans tell little white lies. It's much the same as lying on a dating site, pumping up your resume, or telling your buddies you make more than you actually do. How about beefing up your golf score? Or fibbing about your weight? But of course, listeners to the Expat Files never do that, right? The fact is, it's kind of an ego killer to admit to anyone that you're not a reader. So they're saying now that it's probably more like 50, even 75% of adult Americans who haven't cracked a real book, etc., in a whole year. Anyway, like I said, down here in Latin America, maybe 1 to 2% of Latin Americans actually read for pleasure. And there are multiple reasons for that, mostly being that books are expensive. Up in the States, let's say a book costs $30, down here it would probably cost $40. And since 60 to 80% of the Latin American population only makes about $300 to $500 a month, well, you can see why buying books would be out of the question. So then what about borrowing books the old-fashioned way at the library? Well, you see, that's kind of a problem too, especially for people at the lower end of the scale who could really benefit from the knowledge you get from reading. Well, you see, they just don't have public libraries in Latin America. Why? Because of terribly irresponsible thieving governments. I mean, come on, the public hospitals don't even have gloves, syringes, or toilet paper, much less a dependable supply of clean running water. So then where do you think public libraries rate on the priority list? That said, every big Latin American city does have a public library somewhere. But believe me, they're pathetic, with almost no bestsellers or newer books stocked at all. Just your typical old, tattered, out-of-print books that you might see in a rummage sale up north, only in Spanish, of course. And not that those kind of books aren't valuable, too. Of course they are, but you can't go into a library like that expecting to find a book that you might need or want. You have to kind of search around as if you were at a used bookstore up in the States and hope that you see something that strikes your fancy, which most people here in Latin America aren't willing to do. The fact is, Latin Americans don't have a library culture. Not like we did. When I was a kid, we went to the library at least once a week. We had to. I don't know if they still do that anymore up in the States. I don't think so, since old-fashioned brick-and-mortar libraries aren't much needed anymore because of the internet. But still, for us gringos, those childhood library habits really paid off. Well, for some anyway. Down here, kids really don't hit the library in a real investigative way until they hit high school or even university. Which ain't saying much because, like I said before, less than 5% of Latin Americans ever graduate from a university. Now, of course, they do have libraries at private schools and private universities. But, you know, you have to have a student ID to get in those places, right? Because they are private. But no one that's out of school is interested in reading books anyway, so it's pretty much a moot point. So as one Latin university professor once told me, working at a Latin bookstore is one of the loneliest jobs in the world. Now, remember just a while ago I said that probably 90 or 95% of all the authors throughout Latin America were men? After all, this is a macho society, so you'd expect that. Now, if you check it out, prior to about 1940 or 50 up in the first world, when the US and Europe too were quite male-dominated societies, about 90% of first world authors then were male too. So again, down here in Latin America, there's a heavy lag time effect with female authors. That is to say, if you actually went into a Latin American bookstore and checked the names out, you'd see the vast majority are male. Anyway, when female authors get into the act, they're usually writing cookbooks and travelogues and stuff like that. And of course, pulpy romance novels too. Again, just like in the pre-1950 first world. So, presently, here in Latin America, as for serious literature written by females, not much. And it's not that there aren't some great serious female literature writers. It's just that as soon as they start writing about what really happens to women in Latin America on a personal level, they start drifting into uncomfortable areas that people don't like to hear about, like abused women, incest, rape, alcoholic, abusive, absentee husbands, etc. So then female writers logically drift into social commentaries on women's rights issues and what we would call feminist manifestos. The same kind of feminist stuff that happened up in the States back in the 60s and 70s. Remember that? But as usual, there's a big lag time down here. And even now in 21st century Latin America, the average Latin American just doesn't want to face it or really talk in depth about it. For most, it's just too uncomfortably close to home. So, yes, there are female authors, mostly coming from big Latin countries, but very few actually make a good living at it. And when they do, they're preaching to their choir because their readers are almost exclusively female. So, like I said, there's a huge lag time effect in women's lib and women's rights, etc. So, all you female expat wannabes and goodbies up there, you have to know that's the kind of world you're going to end up in if you come down here to live. Now, that said, I'm going to give you a little example here of one of those very few Latin American female authors that's actually making a living at it and getting a lot of recognition. Now, she's from Mexico, and her name is Laura Esquivel. And, you know, occasionally you see her written up here and there in various media outlets, and lately she's been talking up her latest novel. Oh, and by the way, that's not to say they don't have women's magazines down here. They have plenty of them, but they're mostly frilly glamour and beauty magazines. But note, there's also, unfortunately, tons upon tons of empty-headed, brain-draining soap opera magazines, too. The supermarkets and beauty parlors are just filled with them. You wouldn't believe it. And I must say, Darwin would be proud, since they're adored by a certain class of people with the brains of a gnat. Though, of course, I say that with all due respect, because up north we do have the E! Entertainment Channel, reality shows, and, of course, the Kardashians. So, really, it was your average and sub-average Mr. and Mrs. North America that set that ball of feces rolling downhill to Latin America. And, man, are they running with it. Oh, and speaking of magazines, down here, there are plenty of women's magazines, too. The usual suspects you see around North America, like Glamour and Elle and Women's Fitness. You know, real beauty parlor highbrow stuff. Here in Latin America, you'll recognize them as the same glossy and slick magazines that you see in beauty parlors and supermarkets up north, only they're translated into Spanish and a bit more dumbed down, if that's possible. Because you see, the big New York magazine companies up north have figured the Latin market is growing and the middle class is expanding. Well, since print media is dying up north, being killed by the internet, they've discovered to their surprise that it really does have a second wind down here in Latin America. Yep, magazines and print media are still going strong. You think we ought to clue in Latin America that it's going to go away pretty soon? Well, turns out us expats and gringos aren't clairvoyant, but we do know about lag time, don't we? The fact is, if you ever bring that point up to a Latin person, even an educated Latin person, they just don't believe it. They think, like so many in the States thought 10, 15, 20 years ago, that print media would always be strong and healthy and in demand. Boy, were they wrong. By the way, how's your New York Times stock doing? About as good as your timeshare in Cleveland, I bet. Anyway, as far as women's magazines down here, you won't find many serious ones. Almost always fashion and beauty. Oh, and of course, the soap opera ones. Anyway, for those of you out there who might be interested in the women's take on literature, I'm going to read you a few excerpts from a very recent article talking about this famous author, Laura Esquivel. And of course, it's in Spanish, so let me translate. It starts by saying, "You might think that no one believes literature can still be an agent for social change, but writer Laura Esquivel is not convinced. The Mexican author uses her novels to communicate social problems and suggest models for change, as reflected in her newest book, A Lupita Le Gustaba Planchar, which translates in English to Lupita Liked Ironing." Really, I'm not kidding. The book's name is Lupita Liked Ironing. I mean, come on, try that title out in English and see how far you're going to get. Sounds like a children's story, right? But believe me, it ain't. Anyway, it goes on to say, "This book tells the story of an unlucky alcoholic policewoman who has suffered from violence and lives in a world where appearances, money, and power prevail. She is eventually drawn into the assassination of a politician. Like I said, a children's bedtime story it ain't. Now, here's an interview with the author, and let me do some translation here. Quote, "We live in a sick society," she says. "A society mired in an economic system that works against us women, that has a very negative effect on the social structure of women and the family." Now, my character, Lupita, represents the emotional, spiritual, social, and family hardships experienced by middle and lower class Latin women in Latin America in our time. Lupita embodies a complete picture of a woman, said the author in a recent interview with the magazine Elle. She explained that she's certain that all the miseries endured by her character, Lupita, do not hold a candle to what happens in real-life Latin America to the average woman. So there you have it, folks. From one of the few successful Latin American female authors, or is that authoress? Well, anyway, as it turns out, she decided the best way to get her social message out there is to write novels instead of dry, stodgy nonfiction that doesn't sell nearly as well. Now, note that this author, Laura Esquivel, is the best-selling Latin American female author. In fact, she sold about 4 million plus books. Now, compare that top 4 million sold number to top first world authors like Stephen King and the Harry Potter authoress, who I can't think of right now, both who've sold over 200 million books each. So you're looking at the fact that top first world authors sell more than 50 times the amount of books that top Latin American authors sell, which gives you an idea what the book market is down here, considering the fact that there are a half a billion people in Latin America. And that's why you won't see top-selling Latin authors wearing Rolexes and driving Ferraris. Though some do well enough not to have to live with mommy and daddy anymore. What a relief, huh? Oh, and when I mentioned earlier that first world people tend to lie on polls, you know, Gallup and Harris polls and such, even small little community polls, like the ones college students often hand out in grocery store parking lots. Yep, we lie on those too. Of course, it's an ego thing, to avoid being put on the spot and looking like a doofus in front of the poll taker. Have you done that before? Of course you have, or so say the people at the Harris and Gallup polls, etc. Psychologists say most of us will exaggerate to avoid looking like an idiot. Well, that said, let me tell you about what they call liars here in Latin America. The word mentira means lie. The word mentiroso means liar. However, since calling someone a mentiroso or liar to their face can be quite harsh and even in some cases fighting words, you know, this is a macho society. Anyway, Latins have developed a kinder way of calling a person a liar. Now, you remember Pinocchio, right? Whose nose would grow when he lied? Well, of course, every Disney movie's made it down here and has been translated into Spanish, and what they call Pinocchio here is Pinocho. So, when someone calls you Pinocho, that's like a kind way of saying you're a liar. You know, it's never said harshly like Pinocho. They say Pinocho. In fact, get this, there's a popular television program that's based on trying to tell if a person's lying or not. It's called Pinochito. Pretty much, again, a direct ripoff of a first world show. Remember that one called To Tell the Truth? If you were around back in the 60s and are honest enough to admit it, you remember how popular that show was. So just know that when somebody says Pinocho, he or she is calling someone somewhere, probably one of their friends standing nearby, a liar. In a nice sort of way. Oh, and by the way, that word mentira, or mentiras, which is the plural form of liar, is not to be confused with the word mientras. It sounds almost the same, and it's just missing one letter. And it means while, W-H-I-L-E, while. Again, that's mentiras, lies, and mientras, while. Huge difference in meaning, huh? But believe me, nearly every fresh gringo and new expat makes that mistake the first year or two that he or she's down here. So don't be paranoid thinking people are calling you a liar. Pinocho. Now, changing gears completely, I'd like to finish up on a little story about expat Eddie that I started some shows ago but never got around to finishing. What else is new, huh? In fact, expat Eddie is quite popular with you listeners out there. I get a lot of emails asking not only where is he, how'd he get started, what's he doing now, and if maybe they can talk to him by Skype or meet him. I even get emails from expat wannabes and gonabes up north asking me if expat Eddie's hiring. To which I say, yes, of course he's always hiring. He's got a lot of restaurants, but he's only paying Latin wages, which are $300 to maybe $400 a month. So if I were you, I wouldn't be aspiring to a job like that. You could make almost twice as much by coming down here working as an English teacher in a private school or even at a call center. Companies in big Latin American cities are always looking for English speakers for the call centers. And these days, call centers are paying from $400 to $500 a month to start with bonuses, whatever that is. And just a little side trip on gringos working at call centers. Recently, a new expat came down, a guy who knew absolutely no Spanish, got himself a job day one in a call center, and after about 6 months, maybe it was four, he was promoted to a call center trainer because his English, of course, was first world English. And his job was to train all the quirks in the street slang out of local Latins who were mostly recruited after they'd been deported from up in the States. Because, you know, being up there a couple years, they learned some really bad street English, but call centers will hire people with 60 to 80% English proficiency and tweak their English up by putting them through a training program, which shows you how really desperate these call centers are down here for English speakers and why you can walk right in and get a job day one. And that's also why, in a couple of months, that expat guy I was talking about got promoted to trainer because, like he said, very, very few people at the call center spoke perfect American English. But he did. And that training job he got promoted to started at around $8.50 a month, basically about four times the minimum wage down here. I know, sounds like poverty crap wages, but down here, you could really live like a first world person on $1,000 to $1,500 a month. Remember, I'm talking about off the gringo tourist trail now. So at $8.50 a month, he's not quite living first world, but he's coming close. And like he said, if he sticks around in a big company like that, there are many, many more promotions to look forward to and a lot more money. Well, again, not our definition of a lot more money, but enough to live a first world life. But I digress as usual. Okay, where was I? Oh yeah, I was talking about that expat Eddie story, right? Well, if you remember in a previous show, I mentioned that expat Eddie's girlfriend finally worked on him enough, like the Chinese water torture, and talked him into getting her a nice brand new SUV and a driver. Now, I can tell you this. Once you've taken a middle or lower middle class Latin girl or guy, pick them out of the masses that normally take the chicken bus, and now suddenly they're in a new SUV with their own personal driver. Well, it's an understatement to say that your relationship with him or her is going to get pretty complicated. And as expat Eddie found out, his relationship with gringos and expats like me, who know better, his friends who've always made fun of stupid gringos who do such things, well, don't you know, our friendships and relationships get tested along the way too. Now, I'm not saying at all that you can't do what you want with your money. But when you're down here in Latin America, if you have a Latin girlfriend or boyfriend, or you marry a Latin girl or guy, you're automatically going to get attached to his or her family and extended family in a way you never dreamed possible up in the States. So, you have to know that when she's alone with her friends and family, they're putting certain ideas into her head. They think because she's hooked up with a somewhat wealthy gringo, wealthy not necessarily because he's a successful businessman down here, but wealthy because he's a gringo, and that's the stereotype. Latins believe pretty much all of us gringos are wealthy, and by their standards, we are. So note, if you ever get into a discussion or argument about wealth, and you try to explain that there are very poor gringos too, you're just never going to win that argument. After all, they see the news reports coming from up in the first world where people who never worked a day in their life have cars and refrigerators and houses with air conditioners, and they take vacations, and they get food stamps and schooling and free medical, etc., etc. Remember, Latin America has virtually no safety net like that, so you just can't blame Latins for thinking that every gringo is wealthy. And just to ram the point home, did you know that 3/4 of Latin American households do not have hot water? Unless, of course, they heat it on the stove. So, anyway, the message that expat Eddie's girlfriend gets from her family and friends, when he's not there, of course, is she should be living the life of the ladies she sees on the reality shows coming from First World TV. And, as it turns out, since Eddie is such a soft touch, and he's always been the kind of guy to give you the shirt off his back anyway, even when he didn't have money, unfortunately, he's kind of become the milk cow for her family. Now, of course, Eddie can always say no when they try to hit him up for some money or a job or a loan or ask him to be a co-signer on a loan. Don't laugh. I've been hit up on that one quite a few times myself, and I've never taken the bait yet. So anyway, in Eddie's case, when her family and sometimes her extended family show up on weekends to hang out at his pool and drink his booze, since he's a soft touch, he can't say no or do what a lot of gringos who found themselves in that position do. Pretend they're not home, and eventually the family gets to hint and doesn't come around anymore. But like I said, that's not Eddie. And for those of us gringos in that spot who've had enough of freeloaders and have played the I'm not home card a number of times, it does discourage the family and hangers-on sometimes. But the problem is, once you're in the family, like Eddie, it's very common for the Latin mother or father in the family to invite themselves over to your house because, well, that's commonly done down here. In fact, with some Latin families, it happens every single weekend. Latins, as it turns out, are much more social than we are up in the first world. Now, the problem here is that Eddie is losing his low profile, something that he'd maintained all these years, and now, like any gringo will tell you, once you've got a high profile and you drive around looking like Mr. Moneybags, the only way you can really go back is to move to another Latin country. Now, note it's not Eddie that's screwing up his low profile, but it's his girlfriend and, of course, her family who are doing a pretty good job of it. Eddie's not the one who drives around like Mr. Moneybags. That's just not him. Hell, he has a 5-year-old beat-up pickup truck. But even so, he says now it's getting to be that everybody seems to know him, and he doesn't like that. In fact, he has contemplated moving from his upscale little neighborhood in San Salvador to somewhere else in that country. Just, like he says, far enough to be a half a tank of gas away from her family members. But the problem is, even if you move far, far away to a city within the same country, your recent past and your reputation will soon enough catch up with you. So now, Eddie's stuck and he knows it, and it's not like he's the only guy that's ever happened to. I know a handful of gringos who found themselves in the same spot. In fact, one of my gringo friends, married to a Latin girl, has one daughter, a senior in a private high school down here, one of those so-called helicopter schools where every spoiled, entitled kid at the school either has a millionaire parent who owns a beer company or a cement company, or has a parent who's a disgusting thieving politician, or a dad who's a general or colonel on the take in the military. Now, I'll tell you, the other day this gringo friend of mine called me and he said he just doesn't know what to do. Oops, we're getting towards the end of the show again, so I guess I'm not going to be able to finish this little expat Eddie story till next time. So stay tuned, because next week I promise I'll get to the end of this.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.